Welcome to the Metal Hammer Podcast, episode 92. I'm Mo and I'm here with Eleanor. How are you doing?
Hi. Good.
Answer my question when I ask you that.
I'm doing very well, thank you, Merlin.
Good. I am glad. Oh my God, there's been so much going on this week. We'll get into all of it in a moment. Don't forget to pick up the latest issue of Metal Hammer. It is out right now. Features the one and only Five Finger Death Punch on the cover. We've also got some signed stuff in bundle form coming soon as well. And I've been saying that for a couple of weeks now. But we've had to get stuff shipped over, so it's taken a little bit longer than we thought. But it is very, very, very close to being live. And once it is live, there'll only be a few hundreds of those in the world. So make sure you get them. Keep an eye on tinyurl.com/buyhammer for that bundle when it comes. And of course, the latest issue. If for some insane reason you haven't bought it yet, you should. It's very, very good. We went to see Ghost at Wembley Arena on Friday night.
We did.
Had a lovely time. Didn't get to sit with each other because of guest list stuff, but that's fine. Not complaining. Just would have been nice to hang out, but you know, whatever.
I was fine.
Yeah, fine. I think we were on opposite sides of the arena, actually. Did you see both support bands?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
All right, go on then, because I did not.
I'd never seen them before. Obviously, we've had them in the mag.
Oh, cool, have you not?
No, we've had them in the mag quite a lot, so familiar with them, but I've never seen them. And I really enjoyed it. They actually sort of won me over seeing them live, because I just kind of always thought, yeah, they're okay, you know, I don't like particularly love them, but I think they're okay for what they do. And seeing them live, it felt like really brought it to life. When we walked into the arena, they were just beginning and you could smell like a sort of burning smell. And I was like, this is weird. Mm. Then I noticed they had the incense on the stage and they had kind of a stained glass window type church backdrop thing. And they had loads of green lights and dry ice. And they came on and they're just really cool. They just didn't like that. They just sounded really cool.
Was there much of a crowd there? Because they were on really early, weren't they?
They were really early. There wasn't a huge crowd, but the crowd that were there were obviously quite into it. Probably
That's
showed
cool.
up just to see them. And it was really nice to see them play a venue like Wembley, obviously, because they would usually play like a smaller capacity place. And they'd obviously still wanted to make a show of it. And you could tell they'd put the effort into like making the show and bringing the atmosphere. And I was sitting like three seats down from Jonathan Seltzer, our reviews editor. But it was a bit too far to like lean over. And there was one of the guitarists had this like frayed hoodie on and looked sort of like a kind of frenzied witch. And was doing loads of... he was doing loads
That's
of...
Good band name right there. If anyone's listening and they're struggling for band names, Frenzied Witch.
He was doing loads of really cool like fancy footwork and like kicking his leg out. And he was very sinewy and like... he looked like some sort of otherworldly spirit in human form going around the stage. And I was like, he's my new favourite person. I texted Jonathan. I was like, who's the, like, which is the witch guitarist in Tribulation? And he knew who I meant. He was like, oh, I think he said his name is Jonathan Holtzen. And I was like Googling him afterwards. He's very theatrical. He seems to wear a lot of makeup.
I mean, this is sounding like you've got a crush on the guitarist in Tribulation.
No, I'm not. I do not.
You just talked about it for 2 minutes.
He had a
straight veil
over his face. I just thought it was cool because it was being really theatrical.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be presumptuous.
You were being presumptuous. I just thought it was like a focal point because the singer was cool and did his thing, but he like stood there and sang. So like this guitarist was the focal point of that action, really. He was sort of like speeding around the stage and stuff, and I was like, oh, he's cool.
Well, I have a crush on him somewhere.
And yeah, I thought it was really fun and interesting, and I just really enjoyed hearing the songs, actually. It, like I said, it just kind of brought it to life a bit for me. And
that's awesome. It's like, it's cool to hear the people there that seem to be like genuinely into it as well.
Yeah, and the crowd obviously did get bigger over time, as happens. And the next day, I literally was like listening to Tribulation all morning because I thought, oh, I sort of missed a trick here.
Oh,
I dismissed
awesome.
Them, and actually, it was really good. So
they're a band that have drawn a few comparisons with Ghost in the sense that Ghost were probably more catchy and image conscious to start with in a way, but Tribulation started very much in the proper like underground metal scene, and now they've kind of tweaked their sound a bit, tweaked their image a bit more theatricality, and they're kind of coming out of their shell a bit and turning into something which feels like it could go quite big. And a band like that playing Wembley Arena is crazy.
Also, one of them, Children of the Night, is the cool album that I was listening to.
Yeah, that's a great album.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. And also, apparently, one of the guitarists, might be the one I was talking about, might be another one, I can't remember, plays in a band with Tobias. Was it Repugnant?
Yeah, Repugnant, the death metal band.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Well, there you go then. Like that was an accidental there. Link I just made that I didn't realise existed. might explain partly why they got booked.
It might.
All Them Witches.
Yes.
Played
as well. Did.
Interesting band. I was quite surprised to see them as a main support at Wembley Arena, to be honest, and also for a Ghost gig.
Yeah. I was sort of on the fence with it, to be honest. I'd never seen them before, and you hear All Them. I knew about them already, so it wasn't like a huge surprise to me. But I think if you didn't know about them, you'd see All Them Witches, and you'd think it was some sort of spooky gothic thing. But it's not. It's more like rock and roll jamming type trio thing. And the three of them were on stage. I thought it was quite cool the way they had their setup. Like they were all kind of in a line. It was almost like they were all equal and kind of all creating their sound together. And I thought that was quite cool the way they were kind of arranged on stage. Mm-hmm. Jonathan was like well into it, actually. Jonathan Seltzer, he was like, oh, this is like the best thing ever. But he loves stuff that's sort of like repetitive and jammy. And so that is literally his jam. And I was a bit like, yeah, it's okay. But I was a bit bored for me. It's a bit repetitive, and I didn't love the bass either, because I don't always love bass if it's like too bassy. So for me, I thought they were really like good for what they were, and I thought it was cool, but it just wasn't. I don't know. It wasn't really for me.
Ghost.
What did you
then?
Think? Did you watch them?
No, I didn't see them.
Oh, okay.
No, I came in as they were coming off stage.
I mean, yeah, I don't want to sound down on it. It was good. It's just not good. Not for me. Like I said, not my
fair,
thing.
Fair. That was a balanced review. It's the best we can ask for. right, Ghost. So obviously one of, if not the most significant gig of their career, really. I mean, it's the most, it's not quite the biggest venue in London or the UK, but it's certainly the most well-known and the most prestigious and all the rest of it. I mean, I feel like we've talked about Ghost on this tour specifically a lot. And every time they've turned up and they've just smashed it and it's been brilliant. And this just was no exception, really, was it?
No, I think
in my opinion, anyway.
No, I really enjoyed it. There are a couple of bits towards the beginning where I thought it slowed down a bit too much. There was a bit where Tobias went off and the guitarist played solos and then one of them played EastEnders.
Yeah, I was looking back at the set list and they had three instrumentals and a guitar duel in the first 10 songs.
Yeah.
Which is, I thought the exact same thing. I thought that was an interesting way to pace it.
Yeah. Like for me, that was a bit too much. Like when Tobias was off and they were doing the guitar solo stuff, I thought, oh, cool. You know, this is part of the show. Tobias is probably going to come back in a different outfit or do something mad. And then he just came back normally. And I was like, oh, he didn't even need to be off the stage. Like that wasn't to like cover time or anything. That was literally just part of the show. And I thought to have that at the beginning, it did bring the momentum down a bit.
Yeah, and I think in front of a you know, if you're filling out Wembley Arena, you're at the point in your career where there's going to be more casual fans there. Like you don't get to that size as a band where every single one of those 10 to 12,000 people are like Ghost obsessives who know every single word to every song. Yeah. So I think you need to be a bit more on it, bit more like throwing out big bangers as soon as you can to kind of grab the crowd, bit more in the crowd's face, all that kind of stuff.
Totally though, but I think actually it's worth saying that as soon as Tobias walked out, it was like every Ghost show now, everyone's like,
yeah, totally.
Everyone starts screaming him. Absolute and he's literally
And when
like,
we say Tobias, we of course mean Cardinal Coffee.
Oh, sorry, I meant Cardinal Coffee. And Cardi C comes out and everyone
We assume Tobias walks out somewhere in the band.
Cardi C comes out and everyone's like, ah, and he's like playing up to it and stuff. And that's cool to see because it does actually contribute to the atmosphere. Like the crowd reacting like that does make you react like that. Definitely. It's like they're having a good time. You have a good time as well. But yeah, I thought that was a little bit slow. And I also didn't love Mary on the Cross. I thought that was
really?
Yeah.
You're not into that song?
I like the song, but I think, again, with the pacing, unlike the beginning bit when it was a bit slower, I felt like that was a bit of a slower one. And like literally the whole end of the set was stacked with bangers. And the end of the set was like being on a train that was like going along and like, yeah, I'm having a really good ride. And then the end of it was like when it really like speeds up and they're just like flies off a cliff and you're like, what's going on?
It was crazy. Like I've kind of thought all the same things as you really. I was making notes and yeah, I agree. I thought the first maybe third of the set was paced quite interestingly. I went with a friend of mine from home who hadn't seen them before. And I was interested to see her reactions and kind of, you know, how kind of enraptured in it all she was. And you could definitely see that there was a bit of a lull when, like you said, when Cardinal goes off stage and then the guitarists are jamming. I mean, the thing is, the Ghouls have become such stars in their own rights because they're all so on it and they're so entertaining. And
I was
about
to say, like, their band is just incredible.
Amazing. Like, and they've managed to, like, I feel like I can see the different personalities between each Ghoul now, where I couldn't for the first few times, but now I'm just like, oh yeah, it's that guy. He's the one that does this kind of stuff, and he's the one that's like...
And they really do, like, carry a lot of the show. Because
Tambourine Lad, absolute legend. That guy is a fucking hero. Yeah, like, he's like, I've never seen someone put so much sex into just slapping a tambourine. It was amazing.
The Ghoulettes I thought were great as well. They were like between themselves. They were like working things. But yeah, I really thought they carried a lot of the show, because if you're going to have a show where you've got Cardinal who's kind of going to go off the stage and come back and do little interludes and various things, you do need a cast of characters around him that are going to carry things forward. And they were great, like musically fantastic, and just really like acted the part as well, which is hard when you're wearing costumes and masks. You've got to do a lot of physical comedy,
yeah,
you know, with
definitely.
Your hands and your body language, and
that's
all
a
that
really
kind of
good
stuff.
Point actually, really good point.
And they were brilliant.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, yeah, apart from the kind of slightly interesting set list choice, it's interesting what you say about Mary on the Cross as well, because I think that song is a fucking tune. I love both those new Ghost tracks, but I do think that the verse is the strongest part of that song, because the verse is very urgent and like, and then the chorus kind of like dials back down to this kind of, I don't mean it in a negative way, but in a bit more of a plodding kind of like do 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 do, and it's not quite the hands in the air sing along that a lot of their newer stuff has produced. So maybe that's partly
like
why
a lot more,
yeah, way bigger,
like so much more
definitely
momentum.
I mean, those last three songs were Kiss the Go-Go, Dance Macabre, and Square Hammer, which is just
amazing.
Unbelievable. I mean, like you say, it's just, you get some bands that are able to string three or four songs in the other way, it's just like smack in the face, smack in the face,
it was
smack
like euphoria,
in the face, and it was amazing.
It was like euphoric, and then they had a Glitter Cannon as well. Was that Mummy Dust, the Glitter Cannon?
They had a couple of confetti bits, I think. They definitely had confetti during Dance Macabre,
yeah,
because I got that bit on video when it always goes poof. And yeah, I love the rainbow lights during Dance Macabre as well. That's a really cool touch. It just gave the thing a slightly warmer vibe than it's had before. There are a couple of tiny little changes, like I don't think the Cardinal normally cycles in on a little tricycle, does he?
No, I
that
really
was something
enjoyed
I hadn't
that.
Seen before.
It's from the video, isn't it? Obviously, it's
a
parody
when he's like
of
The Shining.
Yeah. But it's in the episodes as well. And when he came, I was really excited when he came out on the tricycle. I was like, oh my gosh, is that a tricycle?
And it was so like endearingly and purposefully naff, because he kind of went.
And then
backwards a bit. Like, it wasn't really spooky at all. It was just done in this kind of like, ooh, lols.
Yeah. And that's the whole vibe of the band, isn't it?
Yeah,
that
definitely.
Was a really nice touch. And I did think Cardi C was really good. Like, it's the same character now he's been doing for a long time. And he had some of the same lines about like tickling your taint and wobbling your ass and stuff.
Well, he's kind of made it a thing, hasn't he? Like,
people were like excited to hear him. I think just excited to sort of see him, because people just love him and stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
I did think he could have got a stronger reaction, and then he was playing up to it, wasn't he, with the crowd going, come on, like, give me more sort of thing.
Well, again, I think that's maybe an interesting learning curve for them, because they've not done it quickly. They've done it over 10 years, but like, they've got to Wembley at a point where, like I said, they're going to have people coming in that maybe haven't seen Ghost before,
yeah,
and are coming to this big rock show they're excited about, but they might not know every word. They might not know all the typical like little skits they do on stage and stuff. And I think when you're doing that, especially for the first time, you have to really like ram it home what your little bits are, getting in as many big songs as they could have had. I mean, again, in terms of the set list, I wonder if having all those instrumentals was the best way to open up that first third. Like, I think it would have been cool if maybe they stuck in something like See the Light off the new album, just to have another like big sing-along bit in that first part, because it didn't quite feel like there were enough of those.
They didn't play Pro Memoria, did they?
Don't think so, no.
And I was a bit sad about that.
No.
That song.
But, and I mean, obviously, the old stuff is fantastic, and it's what's got them here, and some of their very best stuff is the old stuff, is the old material, and stuff like Ritual still gets a massive reaction, which is great.
Oh, yeah. No, it's cool.
But I do think, especially when you look at Square Hammer, Dance Macabre, and Rats, there's a significant difference in the feel in the room and the reaction when they play those kind of songs.
Absolutely.
And I think that's very telling of where they should be going now. Like, to me, that's where Ghost needs to go. Big, massive, kind of poppy, sing-along rock bangers, like, I think is where they need to be. I mean, my favourite song is... my favourite Ghost track is He Is, and that always sounds amazing.
I thought that was amazing. They did the lights so well for that.
Yeah,
like, he was up on the very back top of the stage, and they had all these massive white spotlights going around.
Yeah, it was gorgeous.
Because I always think that song, to me, feels like a Christian hymn, and that obviously that's like a Ghost thing as well, isn't it? You take those things that feel like Christian hymns and you turn them into the same things but with Satan, and it's, you know, it's part of the whole gag, but it genuinely feels like being in some sort of like satanic service.
So like, that was amazing. And I think those like that Absolution, I think those kind of songs from Meliora, Year Zero should definitely stay in the set. Monstrous Clock I thought was missed. I think that's a really lovely part of the
Ghost
canon.
Always think that's a bit boring.
Oh, that's one of my favorite Ghost songs. That come together, I love
actually
it.
That bit at the end where he always talks about, like, he always does the joking about having sex and coming together and stuff.
Yeah.
That bit was always quite good, and like the come together singing. But the actual verse of the Monstrance Clock, I always think, is quite slow.
That's interesting. I think I really like that in the set. But I just think there's some songs that they need to just keep going and keep in the set forever because they just work. And I think moving forward, they definitely are in a position now where they've got a formula. They can see the kind of songs that really spark a reaction in big arena size crowds. And they need to just keep on that because I just think, I mean, Rats, like I said, Rats is an unbelievable song. Square Hammer, I said the other week, I think might be the best rock song of the last 10 years. And Dance Macabre is massive as well. Like the fever, it reaches like fever pitch in
it
there.
It does.
It's just everyone just suddenly, for most of the gig, people are like nodding their heads, a few fists up, a little bit of dancing, a little bit of headbanging. Dance Macabre kicks off and everyone's suddenly dancing out of nowhere.
That's exactly
it's amazing
what happened. And then the same for Square Hammer as well. It's like you said, fever pitch. It was like a zenith of rocking out. It was like just this crazy kind of like feverish satanic worship ritual arena thing.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I think
I was dancing in my seat by the end.
Yeah, I was as well. I was having a right old boogie. But yeah, so overall, yeah, interesting set list selections, maybe some lessons there for you know, the kind of unwritten rules of working arenas, I guess. But overall, just another fantastic Ghost set. I think they're the most vital band that are doing it on a major level in rock and metal today. And I said baby metal are the most wholesome experience in metal, but I think Ghost are right up there as well because everyone's just having so much fun. It's just such a good time to go see Ghost.
Yeah, it is just really fun. They're just, like we were saying last time we reviewed them, they're just a really fun band and you go there and it's entertainment. It's good fun.
Yeah, fuck yeah. So awesome to see them. Interested to see if we'll see them again on this cycle or not. They still have not done a festival in a long time. So you'd imagine that's got to be on the agenda at some point.
I
think they did Reading, weirdly, not that long ago, but it was in the tent. Or maybe that was a while ago now. Anyway, they haven't brought this big production and all this kind of stuff to a festival, so I hope to see that soon. I was thinking the other day, actually, on the kind of stuff I talked about, like the more catchy, poppy stuff, I could definitely see them rocking up to Glastonbury and going down an absolute storm.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think them coming out and playing Rats to a slightly unknowing crowd and people will be looking at it and thinking, what the fuck is
I'd
this?
I'd love to see that on TV as well.
I haven't even talked about Miasma. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like my favourite song of the last album. I mean, imagine Papa Nile coming up and rocking that saxophone solo out on the Pyramid stage. People would get it and people would love it, I think.
I think it's cool how that's become a thing now as well. Like when it first happened, you're like, this is happening, and now people expect it. And it's like one of these things you're waiting for, and then it happens, and you don't enjoy it any less. You enjoy it even more.
I was thinking about it actually. Like, are they going to try and recreate that kind of moment on the next album? Because, I mean, I still remember when we listened to Prequel for the first time in the office, and that sax coming in was the moment when we all looked at each other and went, oh my God, this is something fucking amazing. So I wonder if they'll try and kind of keep that kind of fun, unexpected swerve as a part of the album.
I imagine he'd be writing with the show in mind, because he of that mindset.
You have to at that level.
Yeah, and also in a lower level, he always has done. He's written for a story and for a performance, And now, having done arenas, you know, you've got to imagine those moments. Didn't he say he wrote Squarehammer literally as well, like for big shows, just to have a hit to play?
Yeah.
And it's like, if you can just crack out a Squarehammer, it's like, do like 12 more of those.
Hell yeah. Yeah. I just, so good. I know we've talked about them a lot on the podcast, but that's because they really are doing something exciting. And if ever there's a band that can do it and actually break through the mainstream while doing something bonkers and totally different to anything else out there, it's Ghost. And I really hope it keeps going, because they are a band that need to be in arenas. Right, let's talk about the Grammy nominations. Always a fun topic in the world of heavy metal.
Yeah, it's just always disappointing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Always disappointing.
We picked out a few to go through because there's some interesting kind of labels of categories and stuff. I'm not quite sure how many of these have always been around. I know they tweaked the formula a little bit.
I've never understood. I meant to look this up before we did this, but I didn't. And maybe you can tell me. I've never understood what the performance category is.
Yeah, so there is a description on the page, but it doesn't really explain it.
Is it like a song that has to be performed, or is it a recording?
It's really vague. They do explain it on the Grammys website,
okay,
but it doesn't clear it up for me. I read it and I was like, no, I still don't get it. So we've got Best Rock Performance, Best Rock Album, and Best Rock Song. So the difference between Best Rock Song and Best Rock Performance, I'm very confused by.
Especially as some of them are exactly the same.
Yeah, Best Rock Album makes sense. So yeah, let's go through them, and then there's some other ones as well. Best Rock Performance category, we've got Bones UK, Gary Clark Jr., Brittany Howard, Karen Owen Danger Mouse is a weird one for rock, and Rival Sons. Best Rock Album, Bring Me the Horizon, maybe not too surprising to see that. Cage the Elephant, who just seemed to be an American thing to me.
Yeah.
Didn't they support Metallica a few years ago as well?
I don't know.
Like, they just seem to be, I don't get it.
I don't get it.
The Cranberries? Eh?
That's still a thing.
I Prevail, who we haven't really talked about much on the podcast. They're quite an interesting band.
They are, but
basically,
I was
like US radio metal, but for a slightly younger crowd.
Yeah, and very like they've got like, you know, 1.5 million friends on Facebook or whatever. Like
friends.
Likes on Facebook. We're all friends, man,
world. That means Metalham has 2.5 million friends.
We do. But yeah, they've got like a huge following, and here they just play much smaller venues, but they do metalcore really well, in that kind of like breakdown bro sort of way with singy bits.
Warped Tour metalcore.
Yeah, but I was a bit surprised to see them in the Best Rock Album, because you would have thought they'd put them in the metal one, really.
Yeah.
If it's got unclean vocals, you kind of think it probably shouldn't go in rock, but there you go. It has done.
And Rival Sons are nominated there as well, so 2 nominations for Rival Sons, fair play. Best Rock Song, Tool, the 1975, Vampire Weekend, Brittany Howard, and Gary Clark Jr. I mean, I don't understand how they come up with these categories.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I understand that the 1975 are loosely a rock band, but them and Tool being in the same category is just, how are Tool not in Best Metal Performance? Wait, they are.
They are, yeah.
Oh, God, this makes no sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Best Metal Performance. So this is where this confuses the shit out of me. None of the bands here are undeserving of being in this category at all. I'm just confused in some cases of why now, when you look at what's exciting and fresh and innovative in the metal scene in 2018-2019. We've got a Candlemass track with Tony Iommi on it. That's Astorolus, the great octopus.
Astorolus. Maybe.
The
watch that
octopus.
Video if you've not watched it. It's very interesting.
And then you've got I Prevail, Killswitch Engage, which is always great to see. Tool again. And Death Angel. These are all great bands, but I'm really interested. I mean, Death Angel getting a Grammy would be fucking bananas and brilliant. In the same way that High on Fire got one last year, it's a bit like,
why now? Yeah.
When there's so much, and I'm not saying what Death Angel are doing isn't interesting, but there's so much interesting stuff that's out there right now. I'm not saying it's the wrong decision, but I'm very interested to know how that panel went.
It's
Death Angel at this point. It's just interests me.
It's not like you're saying any of these people are non-deserving. It's
absolutely
just
not.
What's the reasoning behind it?
I mean, like I said, Candlemass or Death Angel walking up on stage and picking up a Grammy would be an amazing thing for underground music.
But
even in the case of Killswitch, I mean, I think that new album's great. I talked about it a few times. Massive grower. I think it's for Unleashed off the album, this nomination. But again, it's like Killswitch, okay. A band that should absolutely have bagged some Grammys in their time. I'm not sure if they have or not. I don't think they have. But it's just interesting what the thinking is now. I mean, how have Slipknot, on an album that is widely regarded as their best in over a decade, and having had such a great year, and there's so much stuff going on there, how is Slipknot not even getting a look in anywhere?
That's
here?
Exactly what I don't I understand thought it. As well.
Well, Rammstein.
The same with Rammstein.
How are Rammstein yeah, exactly, not getting... Exactly, and I'm not saying that. It has to be big bands, but, you know, if you're putting Tool in there and all the rest of it...
You kind of feel like they've put Tool in because of their chart success this year, because the fact that they streamed their music finally, and then the fact that it all just got into the charts, even if you're not into metal or you just didn't know who Tool were, or you'd ignore them forever and ever, it's like this was the year you couldn't ignore Tool. It was too big. So sure. I feel like they're in there because it's like you just can't, you literally can't ignore them. But
I would imagine, well, I think Slipknot and Rammstein should be in that bracket as well. For the, I mean, Slipknot got a number one on both sides of the Atlantic, didn't they?
They did, but if you're talking about
to be clear, I don't think Tool shouldn't be nominated. I'm just confused as to why Slipknot haven't been.
I'm thinking about it along mainstream terms. So if you've got people coming up with these nominations and they are mainstream consumers, they are going to pick mainstream type acts. You know, like most people have heard of the Cranberries, for example. But with Tool, if you're a mainstream person who engages with mainstream music and you engage with the charts, you then are forced to engage with Tool, whether or not you want to. So Tool, I can definitely understand why that's there.
So do you think Tool are almost more acceptable to kind of be... like you're more likely to be exposed to Tool...
Yeah, definitely.
...as an entity than you are Slipknot?
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say. Thanks for articulating it. So we go, wow, it's a big deal. Slipknot have got number one on both sides of the Atlantic. But, you know, somebody could say, well, X, Y, and Z artists have all had number ones on both sides of the Atlantic all year. What makes Slipknot special? And we go, well, Slipknot are metal. But if you're not into metal, you're just going to ignore it, probably.
And I guess Tool are kind of, quote-unquote, like, cooler as well. They're kind of more alternative. And as a kind of progressive, heavy rock band, you can imagine, I don't know this, but I can imagine Tool getting championed by a lot of artists who are outside the metal scene, but are very cool and credible. I wish I could think of some immediately to mind, but I'm sure there are a lot of people within music itself who checked out that Tool album because they're a widely acclaimed band, whereas Slipknot are the ultimate fucking outsider, Grebo, one of us bands. Like, they're our band. If you wear a Slipknot hoodie, there's nothing cool about that to the mainstream. Like, the logo is one of the ugliest logos ever made, and I say that endearingly as a man that owns multiple Slipknot t-shirts, you know.
Yeah, obviously
it's not that they are not there to be kind of a cool, credible choice. They're there to fucking...
And if you are operating in the mainstream as well, you've got a choice, like visually, then you've got like a band where there's sort of four grown men presenting themselves in a certain way, and then you've got like all those nine blokes with masks on.
Yeah,
and that you could just laugh at that if you aren't,
if you're
in
a prick
world. Exactly,
yeah, you're an absolute prick. But yeah, but Rammstein as well, I kind of feel like,
yeah,
I guess
no,
they're
sucks.
Super metal as well, but they're not quite as like fundamental Grebo as Slipknot are.
It's just,
to us,
metal
anyway.
Just gets ignored by the mainstream.
Yeah.
It just sucks.
And the thing is that they've got a best metal category here. And again, I'm not slagging off any of the bands nominated here, but like Why I Prevail getting nominated over them.
Well, it's the American thing as well. Like, it's harder for us to get our head around that because maybe on American rock radio, it's like, oh yeah, of course we have to nominate I Prevail. Like, everyone who likes metal likes them.
I would like to see Venom Prison get a fucking Grammy nomination.
Yeah, imagine.
Do you know what I mean? Another, like, rulebook ripping, feminist, fuck you, death metal album compared to, you know, an okay album by I Prevail. Like... Oh, I don't know. There's so much good stuff that happened last year and this year, and I just think...
Or even if you're going to go mainstream metal, like Korn, that was a good album.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Korn's the kind of... Maybe it came along too late.
Oh, I don't know.
Because the time period for Grammys is a bit weird, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, probably a bit earlier. And then they don't get announced till next year, even though it's 2019. It's all a bit weird.
Yeah. No, Korn are definitely... They're quite a good example of a band who I could definitely see getting a Grammy nom, because most people have at least seen that logo on a hoodie, and they kind of, again... were big in metal at a point where metal was like
one at some point, or just a nomination.
I don't know, I feel like we might have had one. The Grammys are so weird. I think Tenacious D won the best metal Grammy once. Like, it's just bizarre how that whole organization works. And also there's a best alternative music album, which has Big Thief, James Blake, Bon Iver, Vampire Weekend, and Tom York. I'm sorry, James Blake is not fucking alternative. James Blake is like again, perfectly fine artist. If you like him, cool, whatever. I like some stuff like that as well.
Dude in the hat.
But I mean, alternative music. Like, come on, man. We're talking from the hymn sheet of like Jane's Addiction and stuff here. Not like...
Okay, Korn have had a fuck ton of nominations.
Yeah, so, I was going to say, it would make sense if they... Yeah,
98 nominated for Chutes and Ladders. 99 nominated for No Place to Hide.
That's cool.
Yeah, four more nominations, three for Freak on a Leash stuff, one for Did My Time. And then there's
loads of nominations is what we're getting at, Elle.
No, they won two. They won Best Metal Performance in 2003 for Here to Stay. Brackets,
banger.
Brackets clean. And they won the Best Music Video for Freak on a Leash in 2000. Ah,
that's
a video.
Richly deserved.
I'd say that's my favourite music video ever.
So Best Video, not even Best Metal Video.
Just music video.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Like, that is a point where metal, we were actually talking about this a little bit off air, like, that is a point where metal was like doing stuff and being seen on the mainstream platform, like probably like never before. I mean, Korn winning a Grammy for a video that is one of the greatest metal videos ever made within an organization that is largely swerved towards the mainstream is fucking amazing. And I'd love to see that happen more.
I want metal in the mainstream. I don't care if people bitch about it not being ours anymore being cult or whatever. I'd want it to be.
I agree. I understand that metal, obviously metal exists at the grassroots and there it will always thrive and it will always be great. But metal being on the mainstream is not going to affect a band being able to play the Underworld on a Wednesday night or not. That's going to happen anyway. But the fact of the matter is, many of your favourite black metal bands were first inspired by Kiss, who were put themselves straight on a platform, put themselves in people's faces and tried to push themselves into mainstream as much as possible. The fact is that when you have rock bands and you have true alternative music out in the mainstream, on televisions, on radios, it makes the scene healthier and it inspires more bands because that's how you see stuff. Yeah. I saw metal videos by seeing metal channels back in the day, one of which Scuzz now doesn't exist anymore, you know?
No.
So these things are important, and I think, you know, it's easy to just go, who cares about the Grammys? But it would be nice to see, nice for us all to go, oh yeah, they've smashed that. That is exactly where metal is at.
If you don't know anything about metal, it's really hard to actually know that it exists. Like you said, if you're not seeing it on TV channels, it's not in the mainstream. You might really love metal, but you'll just never even find out about it.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you read Metal Hammer, which you should be doing. Because we ain't going to stop repping, even if other people will. But yeah, that all said, I wouldn't complain about any of those bands picking up a Grammy. I Prevail will probably be the least inspiring to me personally. I think it'd be badass for Killswitch Engage to get a Grammy. They absolutely... Can you check if they got a Grammy?
Killswitch Engage?
Yeah.
Okay.
If they haven't already, Killswitch Engage are absolutely a metal band that should have a Grammy on their shelves. So should Tool, to be fair. I don't know if they've won a Grammy yet or not.
They must have done.
They should have. Look at me bitching about the Grammys when I don't even know who's won them.
It's really easy to forget, though.
Candlemass and Death Angel getting Grammys would be absolutely nuts. But again, what is the thinking?
They're in the artist section. Oh,
not sure.
Hang on a sec. They've had three nominations
and no wins.
So one, we were talking about that, one of them is for Best Metal Performance for Unleashed.
Cool.
Then in 2013, they were nominated for Best Metal Performance for In Due Time. Banger. 2004, they were nominated for Best Metal Performance for The End of Heartache.
So you get that as a very timely spot on, you know, that is when Killswitch Engage should be getting nominated when they're producing great songs. So that's happened three times for them, which is good. I guess they're my favourite band out of this bunch that got nominated, so I'd like them to win.
Tool they won Best Metal Performance for Schism in 2002. Cool. Best Metal Performance for Anima in 98.
Well, they won these.
Yeah.
Well, they don't need another one then. Give it to Killswitch. That's my official.
And they got nominated for a few things as well.
There we go. In other news, Abath has gone to rehab. Legendary face of Immortal, of course, and in recent years has been playing around the scene with his own band. So yeah, Abath had he's had you know, a few shaky performances over recent years, and he had a pretty disastrous set in Buenos Aires the other day that resulted in the cancellation of his South America tour. He looked like he was heavily inebriated when he was performing, and the set got cut short. And now he has officially announced that he has gone to rehab. So he said in a statement on Instagram, or on social media anyway, Abath has said, "It's no secret that I've been battling addiction. I've now come to realise that it's time to pick a fight with this demon. I've committed myself to a rehab program that's going to help me get clean once and for all. I feel more motivated and determined than ever to win this battle." And of course, his rehab admission means he's also had to cancel upcoming dates with Bombers, who's his Motorhead's tribute band. So yeah, power to Abath. Hopefully see him pull through that. You know, very positive that I guess one of the positives of social media is that we are able to see bands, you know, not shy away from what's going on and kind of admit what's happening and be able to openly go and deal with that. So any updates on all that front, stay tuned to metalhammer.com, of course. What's else been going on, Elle? Let's look at this Bloodstock announcement.
They've announced loads more bands for the Sophie stage.
Yeah.
They've announced Bloody Wood, Castle Decapitation, Memoriam, Ramage Inc., Green Lung and Bosque.
So there's some really cool bands there. Castle Decapitation, who someone asked us about a video of that we'll get to later.
They are releasing their new record this week as well.
Oh, wicked. We'll definitely go check that out. A band probably whose message is more definitely more pertinent than ever, and they've been saying it all along.
And they were right. Bloody Wood.
Yeah, Bloody Wood. Let's talk about them. They're pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think we talked about them. Did you
see
them?
New metal, Bollywood. I did, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great.
So yeah, Bollywood, new metal. Really cool to see Bloodstock continuing to rep for bands right around the world.
So fun as well.
If you're, I think they're headlining the Sophie Tent on one of the days. If you're thinking about going to see them, you know, don't think twice about it. Go and see them because they are, as Elle can confirm, an absolute riot.
Also, Ramage Inc., love them. We've had them on Cover Mount CD a few times. Really rate them. Great band. Cool. And Bosque, they're solid.
Yeah, Bosque, they've been around the world as well. Green Lung too, Memoriam, yeah. Another great announcement from Bloodstock. That takes place in August next year. Ticket details available through the Bloodstock website. I just added this on my notes to talk about very briefly. Faith No More are back.
Yeah.
They've announced a trio of European 2020 tour dates. They're playing Ireland, France and Norway. I think those are all festival sets. The France set is, of course, part of that absolutely bitchin' Hellfest lineup that Elle's been losing her mind over all morning.
I'm so excited about it. You were a bit nonplussed, and I was like, look, Merlin, look, it's Deftones.
Well,
it's all these amazing bands. I just want to go. I just want to see them all. One of the days is on my birthday. This is the greatest time.
Yeah,
and you were a bit like,
eh. It's a banging lineup. I guess it's not that I don't think it's not a fantastic lineup. It's just that I looked at it and thought that's L as fuck. Deftones, Faith No More, System, Korn, loads of like Devin's on it. The sugars on it.
I'm proud.
Peripheries on it.
I'm proud to be me, Merlin. You can't take
so
that away
you should
from me.
Be. That's absolutely killer lineup. Yeah, fantastic festival, and yeah, one of the three dates so far that Faith No More have confirmed. We were wondering whether they might end up at Download, but it looks like one of those. I think the Ireland date is on the only day of Download where it looks like there might be a slot for a band like Faith No More. I think. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where they end up in England, if they end up in England.
I hope they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll do their own thing. We don't know. We don't have the info, man. What else is happening, El?
I don't know what that was. Ozzy's got a new single out. Yeah. Woo. It's called Straight to Hell, and it features Slash.
Yeah, off the new album coming in January. What did you think of it? Did you actually listen to this one?
I did, yeah.
Hooray!
I enjoyed it. It had the choral thing at the beginning, and I kind of liked it how the chorus was like saying straight to hell tonight, and then you get that kind of the from the chorus.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, it's cool. Good kind of bouncy.
That choral response.
Yeah, good kind of bouncy, classic, faster Aussie track. I wouldn't say Slash was super noticeable on it.
I didn't really notice.
You know, it's good to hear him on there. A little bit of bluesy stuff and soloing and such like. Fine, all good. Marilyn Manson's released another new song as well. Another cover. kind of wanting him to just get on with his own shot now. I don't like the fact he's become a bit of a cover artist. But he's done a cover of Doors classic, The End. Another kind of outlaw country kind of vibe around this one, which I'm very keen on this kind of whole approach from Manson.
Yeah, we had it on the office the other day and I can't remember exactly what I said, but there's a bit in the background where I think he just kind of goes, motherfucker. I was just like, you're just saying motherfucker in the background. I was like, I don't think this was in the original.
Maybe not.
It's cool. I like the outlaw country, psychedelic, weird, culty thing he's doing. I think it really suits him.
Yeah,
but like
it does,
you said,
really suit him.
I want to hear the original content.
Yeah, definitely. Hear. Like basically, like the last couple of tracks you've put out, make your new music like that, but yours instead of someone else's, and we'll all be happy. Big up the double M. Reader questions, come to facebook.com/melthammerreaders to hang out with us and ask us questions for the podcast or about the magazine or anything else you want to chat about. We've got a wicked community on there. I think it's coming up to 3,000 people.
Yay.
On there now, which is awesome. So thank you very much everyone for taking part. Sam Welch asks, in the last podcast you were casting films from albums. We were indeed. Basically picking albums that would make good films. Now, which artist, band or collaboration would you choose to create a concept album based on an existing movie or TV series? So for an example, Sam says he would pick Nightwish doing an album based on Frozen.
I think that would be awesome.
I love that.
And it's not that
Floor,
far.
Floor like hammering Let It Go exactly. As the kind of centre bridge would be amazing.
And it's also not that far from things they've done before. Like.
True. Scrooge McDuck.
I know. We had
Thomas did that.
We had that in the office the other day. You weren't here, Merlin, and I just brought up the fact that Thomas Holopainen once did an album based on Scrooge McDuck, and everyone was like, no, you're just making shit up. And I was like, no, it's a real thing. That happened.
I would watch that. I was saying the other day, I think Frozen is massively overrated as a film. I think it's all right, but in the world of Pixar classics, it's quite far. I don't think it is a Pixar, but you know what I mean.
I think
it's quite far
that,
down the list.
That anthem made it massive.
Yeah, like Let It Go is a big tune.
Yeah.
What have you done for this? what bands are you getting to cover? What stuff?
This was really last minute, and I've gone for TV instead of film just because I probably watched a lot more Netflix this year. And I was just trying to think of
other streaming platforms are available.
I was trying to think of what I've watched on streaming platforms and how that would go into an album. So the first program I thought that I've like been watching this year was Sabrina, the dark interpretation of it.
The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, isn't
That's
it?
That's the one, yeah. And I was like, oh, who could do that? And then I was like, Trent Reznor could do that.
Okay, interesting.
I'm not sure because he's done
definitely got his hands in the movie world.
He's done kids' movies recently. I can't remember what the name of it was. He's done a kids' film. Yeah,
wow.
I think because maybe he wants his kids to be able to listen to his work without him like breaking down and sounding like he's in a drug hole. But yeah, I can't remember the kids' film he's done. Done loads of soundtrack work, and even though it is like, you know, Sabrina's darker than Sabrina the Teenage Witch, it's still like an entertainment program. It's not like seriously creepy or anything, but it has that sort of like cartoony gothic aspect to it. So that could be quite cool. I've been watching BoJack Horseman this year.
Oh, as everyone should.
And
one of the greatest
like,
cartoons ever made.
I was like, who could do BoJack Horseman?
I have no idea who you're gonna pick for this.
And because the theme tune is like, you know, kind of that airy indie sort of thing.
It's done by a well-known band, isn't it? I can't remember.
Yeah,
who did it,
I can't remember who it is. And it's all like,
what's
that?
That's a theme tune. And he goes,
BoJack the Horseman.
What do you mean the one at the end?
You don't know.
Oh, you meant the one at the end?
Oh, yeah.
I meant the one at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but yeah. I've been a very famous TV show. Yeah, that is the one by the famous band, sorry, actually. Yeah.
Don't act like you. Anyway, I was thinking like it would have to just be, I don't want to do an indie band because we're Metal Hammer, but it would also have to be something that's like a bit fucked up and weird. And also something, you know, maybe a band that was used to anthropomorphizing animals. So I chose Igor.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Because he had the song called Chicken Symphony where a chicken played a song. He got his pet chicken to play a song and then he made it into music.
Okay.
You're so unimpressed.
I thought you could say Devin.
Oh, that would be great.
God, that's my idea. I'm pitching fine. That.
And then the other thing I've been watching, Stranger Things. And I just,
oh, cool.
I just picked Grave Pleasures.
Oh, yeah, great shout.
For being 80s and shit.
Or you could do like, I don't know why I'm reinterpreting all your ideas. You could do one of the synthpop bands, would be good. Maybe.
Yeah, Carpenter Brute would be cool.
Although that is kind of like what
it's
the
It's sort of the same
is.
Thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Grave Pleasures.
I feel like there's
that.
Loads of stuff here, but yeah, they were the ones that I thought of.
Cool.
How about you?
I would watch, well, I wouldn't watch the Eagle one.
So mean.
I picked horror movies, unsurprisingly, because I'm a cliche. And it's just metal and horror is just ripe, isn't it? So first one I picked was Slipknot, doing a full concept album based on the Evil Dead franchise and story. I think that'll be fucking amazing. Mm. It's not quite the kind that, like, Evil Dead is kind of a bit like spookier than what Slipknot deal with kind of image wise, but it's still very visceral, very violent, especially if you look at the 2013 reboot, which is amazing if no one's seen it. It's so, like, maybe the best reboot ever. So yeah, I thought that would be really cool. Just loads of like nasty, visceral lyrics from Corey based on the curse and all the classic horrible things that happen in it.
Yeah.
Severed limbs and hands running around and chainsaws and all sorts of cool shit. So yeah, that was quite an obvious one. I picked Venom Prison. Have you seen a film called Teeth?
No.
It's about a woman who has teeth in her vagina.
Oh, yeah, Vagina Dentata.
Yeah, Vagina Dentata.
No, I do know that
And
film,
she
yeah.
uses it to castrate men who attempt to assault her and stuff.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very in fitting with the last Venom Prison album and some of the things around that. So I thought that could be quite cool. And what's the other one? Oh, yeah, I've got Cannibal Corpse doing Hellraiser, which is really easy and obvious. It's just really gory.
I'd actually like to see one that you didn't expect. Like, I was really obsessed with Gilmore Girls this year and watched every single season. I'd like to see, like, Cannibal Corpse do Gilmore Girls or something.
Yes. Okay. I would definitely watch that, to be fair. Oh, why is that really predictable now? And then I had Mercury doing... well, I picked Mercury to do Midsummer because Midsummer is kind of pagan-y,
Wicker
Man-esque thing. But I haven't actually seen Midsummer yet. I know, losing horror points for not seeing that, but I can never get anyone to go with me, so whatevs. So I thought maybe I shouldn't pick that if I haven't seen it yet. So I picked The Witch instead.
I'll go watch it with you, Merlin.
Thanks. It left the cinema months ago. Gotta wait until I can watch it Sunday by myself at home. So yeah, I picked The Witch for Mercury instead, which I think would work very well sonically with what she was doing on Mad Over
It. That would be cool.
So yeah, that would be fun. Let's do the next question.
Chris Haylock asks, what are your thoughts and reactions to the Unerasable Past video by Cattle Decapitation?
I thought it was quite cool that you asked this because you were talking about it the other day.
Yeah, you were just leaving the office and...
Oh yeah, I was like, what is that?
Yeah, and I was watching it and it was the end of the day. I think it was like 5:30 or something. And it was like about 13 to 15 minutes long. I sat there and watched the whole thing and I just felt really miserable afterwards. It's a really cool video, but it's just, it's about like...
Give us a brief summary.
It's basically like what we're doing to the planet. And then the visuals are all kind of like red and black and people's burning skulls and apocalyptic skies. And it's basically just like the death of humanity because of our own actions. And it's pretty heavy and given everything in the headlines about climate change and our footprint and the way we behave as the human race and stuff, it feels very timely. Obviously, you mentioned earlier things they've been talking about for a long time, cattle decapitation, but you kind of watch it and it's just a bit of a gut punch. You're like, this is very beautiful and also very horrifying.
Totally fair.
It definitely made me feel very dark, and it's interesting that music and videos can still do that, because we are more hardened in this day and age with things we see on social media and things we see on the news, and we hear messages all the time. We hear a lot of negative messages all the time. But watching that video, I was like, whoa, this is some serious shit.
I think it's so great that I genuinely feel like music videos are having a bit of another renaissance at the moment. Mm-hmm. Another renaissance? Just a renaissance is fine.
Tautology.
Yeah. You know... like YouTube or other platforms are available, has I think because it's become a way with which music fans actually really consume music now. I think it's really made putting a kind of a interesting, thoughtful, provocative video together worthwhile. And I think, you know, the fact that we're sitting here talking about a video by a death metal band is really cool. It's cool that bands can still use that medium to spark debate and interest. And, you know, what Cattle Decapitation have been writing about and standing for, you know, has never been more important than it is now. And, you know, long may their message continue, because it's important. And then really not afraid to use
harsh
imagery to show it.
They do not shy away from it. And they were talking about how in this video they've used the artwork from the record and sort of brought that to life. And the album is called Death Atlas, and obviously Atlas was a god in Greek mythology who was responsible for carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders, or the weight of the heavens on his shoulders. Death Atlas, you can see if you look at the artwork, it is death. It is a skeleton with it's the reaper, you know, it's a skeleton with the scythe, and it's holding the world on its back, and the world is on fire, and all around him is like this sort of black and red sky. And it's just, you know, it's the death of everything, like the death of the world.
It's a great piece of art.
Yeah. And again, it's a gut punch, and it's got, what's it called?
Sand timer.
Yeah, no, an hourglass.
An hourglass.
It's got an hourglass on it.
It's made up a term.
No, I think that's another term. It's got an hourglass, and you can see that it's almost run out. And it's just, you know, all the symbolism and the colours and that. You're just like, fuck me, I need to go and have a lie down.
Yeah. So if you want to have your mind blown in a very sombering way, then go check out the new Cattle Decapitation video. Fantastic band that deserve a lot of attention. Morgan Colton says, you have the power to resurrect one legend. Who do you bring back for one last gig?
What a question.
I probably wouldn't bring someone back because it's weird, but I'm going to reframe this as if I could nip back in time for a gig to see someone.
It's a bit less
alive.
Morbid, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit less ethically dubious.
Who's your pick then?
Well, mine are all quite obvious, to be honest. But, I mean, obviously, Freddie Mercury is a really obvious answer, but that's because he was such an amazing front man. And I think to be able to actually see that in the flesh would be incredible. On a personal note, I'd love to see both Phil Lynott from Thin Lizzy live. Thin Lizzy, one of my favourite rock bands. They're so great. And he was just Live and Dangerous, one of the greatest live albums ever. He was just so charismatic and so cool. And I would have loved to have seen him live. Randy Rhodes as well, probably the guitarist that got me into kind of the idea of solo-y guitar music when I picked up the tribute Ozzy Osbourne live album, and would have loved to see him with Ozzy back in the day. Lane Staley, again, quite an obvious one, but would have loved to see. I think Alice in Chains have been fantastic with William, but would have loved to see Lane at his peak. Chuck Schuldiner as well from Death would be pretty cool. Just a legend as well. So yeah, all quite obvious choices really, but there's a reason these people are obvious. It's because they made a real mark, and yeah, there you go. One just sprung to mind really randomly, totally not metal, but I would have loved to see Amy Winehouse as well. It was shocking and horrible what happened with her. Mm. She was an amazing talent, and I would have loved to see her when she was in a happier place.
I would also pick Lane Staley. I love Alice in Chains. I never saw him. And Nirvana as well. I'd pick Kurt Cobain.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think of that. Yeah, I'd love to see that.
I only knew about Nirvana after he'd died. So
yeah, me too.
I was not old enough to go and see them at the time. So yeah, they're my picks.
Blinding choices. You can do the next one. I did the last one.
Oh, okay.
Nearly ran away with myself there.
Also, this guy's or girl has got a cool name. Curious Badger. Curious Badger asks, as we are approaching a new decade, I would like to know what your defining band from each decade is. The 70s, 80s, 90s, noughties and 10s.
Go on.
Okay. 70s, I've
sticking with metal bands, yeah?
Yeah. 70s, I've got Black Sabbath. I think you kind of have to. It's the year zero for metal.
Yeah, it's them or Priest, really, isn't it? And I think you have to go with the band that started it all.
80s, pick Metallica.
See, I went with Maiden, but it was hard. Yeah.
Did you just pick Maiden because you like them more?
I didn't actually. I think Metallica did more for the evolution and the defining of what metal could be in the 80s. You know, Maiden, I think, are the greatest band of all time, let alone metal band, but
We know Merlin.
No, just saying. But if you look at the musical journey, I mean, Maiden did loads of different stuff themselves. You know, they kind of went proggier. They brought in more synths at one point. You know, they moved away from a kind of punkier sound that defined their early records. But if you look at the journey that Metallica took from Kill 'Em All to and Justice for All, I think, you know, I mean, that was almost kind of opened the world up to what metal could be and the potential metal.
So I think you're basically saying Metallica.
Well, no, because I still think, despite all that, I still think heavy, like the 80s was when heavy metal became a thing. Not like, you know, I mean, obviously Sabbath invented it as heavy metal. But when you think of heavy metal, you think studs and leather, chains, fuck yeah, horns in the air, high-pitched vocals, and, you know, Maiden defined that. Like, what 80s was in metal world, I think Maiden defined that more than any other band. I genuinely do.
Well, you just painted a picture of Priest for me, so...
Yeah, also true. Priest, absolutely. I think Maiden probably win by default just by being that bit bigger, I guess.
Well, I'm still going to go with Metallica, so...
Totally fair.
Cool. Can agree to disagree.
Well, I kind of agreed.
And I kind of get what you were saying too.
Hooray!
Hooray!
See, this is how you have sensible debate, politicians.
90s.
If you're listening.
Yeah, if you're listening to the Metal Hammer podcast. 90s.
I've got I'm torn here because I've got Metallica.
Right.
But purely because of the Black Album, because I think the Black Album pretty much changed everything, again, in terms of sonics, production, what metal could achieve, kind of slowing metal down into this kind of like arena rock heaviness that loads of bands would pick up down the line. But then also I kind of think for a metal band that defined the 90s for being a band, not born in the 90s, but kind of that hit their stride in the 90s, I think you'd have to say Pantera.
I picked Pantera. Yeah. Yeah, I picked Pantera because they pushed it into that groovy sound, and like everybody that you interview from the 90s are just like, oh yeah, everything was just rolling along fine. And then Pantera came out of nowhere, and then Pantera changed the game. And yeah, I picked Pantera.
Definitely. I mean, Cowboys from Hell came out in 1990. Like that, it's like year dot for the 90s. And they came out
Good Display in 92.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think it probably has to be Pantera.
Okay.
Who do you got for the noughties?
Slipknot.
Yeah, same.
I mean, you can't obvious, mess with that.
Iyer in 2001, hit number one, like, and they just went on to become the biggest band of that era by a mile.
Everybody knew who they were. We were just talking about the mainstream earlier. You had them on mainstream TV. You had people, you know, mini moshes in the hoodies walking down the streets. Parents knew who they were. Everybody knew who they were. And every band that you speak to from... who's formed since the 2000s will probably talk about Slipknot in some way.
I think if you want a difference, like when we're talking about how bands break through to the mainstream, you know, Ghost have hit arena level right across Europe. That's fucking awesome. But that doesn't mean that they've broken through on a mainstream level yet. Because I was in, I think, lower sixth form when Volume 3 came out. And... everybody in my year, even people that absolutely hated metal and used to piss out from listening to metal, everyone knew Duality. Like, everyone knew that, put my fingers into my art. Like, people even used to take the piss out of us using those lyrics and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, everybody knew that song around that age bracket. And that's kind of what you need a band like Ghost to do. You need Squarehammer or, you know, a song down the line to be a track that everybody fucking knows. Like, it just gets played and people know it regardless. Not necessarily in our generation, but kind of younger generations discovering music for the first time and all the rest of it need to know what that song is all about. And Duality did that for me in the noughties.
It's that thing where if you walk down the street and stop someone and said, do you know who Slipknot are? Probably, yeah. But, you know, if you walk down the street and stop them and say, have you heard of Ghost? Probably not.
No, probably not. And then you look at, like, again, not to go too far off track, but then you look at Rolling by Limp Bizkit. Who doesn't know that song? I mean, everybody knows that song.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But that said, Slipknot, we both agreed on that. Definitely defined metal in the noughties.
The tens.
Who you got for that? Well, we've probably got the same band.
Well, we just had them on the cover. I just put Five Finger Death Punch.
Oh, did you?
But also, brackets, Ghost.
Oh, yeah, I put Ghost.
Because Ghost and Five Finger have had that rise we were talking about. Like, Five Finger we had on the cover and we've sort of celebrated.
Five Finger's a good shout, actually, yeah.
Because they've been doing arenas for a while now, for a few years, and they had a fairly swift climb. They've been putting albums out consistently, and they are metal. no doubt about it. Whereas Ghost, obviously in our world, but they're a bit more kind of classic sounding.
Yeah, I mean, there's about three metal riffs across the whole of Prequel.
Yeah, they've just done their first arena show. So Five Finger are kind of further along. But in terms of like, I don't know, it's hard. It depends what categories you use. But for me, Five Finger brackets Ghost was my sort of answer.
I use Ghost because even though they haven't had that true breakthrough moment like all these bands we've mentioned have, I still feel like there just feels like there's something about them. And I think whereas Five Finger Death Punch, I mean, they are a very recognisable band. You recognise a Five Finger Death Punch riff, but at the same time, they are a band who basically do heavy, groovy riffs. They look like kind of like macho metal dudes, very colourful characters. I think they've pretty much perfected that formula, but I don't think they really invented that formula.
Yeah.
Whereas Ghost, even though a lot of what they do is derivative, musically speaking, like that band coming along and looking like that and playing the songs they do and cultivating the following and the atmosphere and the kind of like almost like the narrative that they've cultivated is unlike anything we've seen before. And I think they're the closest thing we've got to a genuine breakthrough band that can actually do something exciting and different, like Slipknot did when you'd never seen nine masked mentalists smashing around the stage together before, like Pantera did when you'd never seen a bunch of skinheads playing heavy groove metal before, like Maiden did, like Sabbath did. You know, I think Ghost have come along and done something which is genuinely feels like something that's not been done in the way they're doing it before. And so for me, that and also, you know, they started in 2000. Well, their first album came out in 2010. They've grown with each album. The cult around them's got bigger. The arguing around them has got bigger. They're controversial, which is always a good thing to be, in my opinion. And they finished the decade headlining some of the biggest arenas in Europe. So I think for me, they've really made that journey perfectly.
And they do have that unique identity. Maybe I'll change it to Ghost brackets Five Finger Death Punch.
Ooh, nice. Nice. So there you go. I think that was a pretty solid list we've got there. Zanya Arakat asks, will any of you guys from Metal Hammer be attending the Worlds Collide tour in the UK? That's with Temptation and Evanescence. I'm going.
It's going to be great.
Be loads of bangers.
I've not seen Evanescence in years.
No, I haven't seen them since the last proper album, which was 2011.
And with Temptation. Crazy.
8 years. That album's got some jams on it as well. My Heart is Broken, one of the best rock power ballads ever. Ever. I can't believe it was 8 years ago, though.
Eight whole years.
It's as long since that last album and now as it was between Fallen and that album, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Evanescence maths.
Yeah. Oh, my word. But yeah, we'll be there. It's going to be good fun. That is it for this week's show. Thank you, as always, for listening. If you're in the market for Black Friday stuff, I know all those shenanigans are going on. Do log on to the Metal Hammer website across this weekend. We're going to have a ton of awesome deals. Highlighting the very best deals for all the gear you want. Things like headphones, turntables, sound systems, all that cool shit. So if you're looking for something for Black Friday in that vein, log on to metalhammer.co.uk. Don't forget to pick up the latest issue as well. And we will see you next week. Goodbye, Eleanor.
Goodbye, Merlin.